Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. My name is Ali West, I'm your host and I welcome each and every listener to the show today. Whether you are a brand new listener, this is your first time, welcome. Or if you are a returning listener or a regular listener, then welcome back. Always grateful to have each and every one of you listening in to the show. This is episode number 37, but before we get started with today's episode, let me just point out a few things. Firstly, for the new listeners, I want to introduce the Kinetic Fitness Show and tell you what it's all about. So this podcast is all about helping you to live a longer, healthier, happier, and more joyful life. I do that through covering different areas and different topics all centered around health, wellness, well-being each week. Some weeks I have a great guest on and I pick their brain and dive into their knowledge and expertise on that particular area and share their stories. Other weeks, I just share my knowledge and expertise of over 10 years within the health and fitness industry. So yeah, this podcast is all centered around helping you ultimately to be a better version of yourself. If you haven't already liked, followed or subscribed to this podcast, then please do so now. It only takes a quick click and you'll be updated with all of my latest episodes. Secondly, if you haven't left me a review, then please do leave me a 5-star review if you think I'm worthy and deserve it. I'd hope to think so. So yeah, if you can, leave me a 5-star review. Tell me how you're finding the podcast and I can hopefully bring you more of what you want to hear. So I always welcome feedback and comments. And if you can leave me a review, that would be awesome. Third and final thing before we get stuck into today's episode is if you are on Instagram, don't forget to follow me. My handle is Ali West Fitness. That's Ali, A-L-I, West, like the direction, and fitness, like fitness. So Ali West Fitness, and you can follow me on Instagram. Take a screenshot of the podcast episode that you're listening to and share it, and I will share it with my friends and followers as well. Also, via Instagram, you can send me a direct message and an email. My email address is in my bio, so do not hesitate to get in touch. I'm here to help you. So anything health, fitness, wellness, nutrition, mindset orientated, just get in touch and I can help you with that. That's enough about that. Let's move on to today's episode and give you a little bit of a brief intro into my guest today. Before I do intro my guest, let me give you a little bit of a brief backstory about why and how I came about getting today's guest on. I have been fascinated for many years with the area of adventure and also in particular mountaineering. Let me just point out that I don't climb myself. I've dabbled with a little bit of bouldering and I've been on ropes a couple of times, but I'm not a climber, I'm not a mountaineer. But this area just fascinates me. How people can climb big mountains around the world, how people can scale sheer rock faces, how people can do these crazy endurance adventure races and just complete them, but also people that set records, like my guest today has set numerous records. So this area fascinates me. I've watched so many documentaries on Everest, on climbing, on free climbing. So I'm really into this area. So for me to get this guest on today is a massive honor, and it's obviously an area that I'm interested in, but also the knowledge, the wisdom, the expertise that my guest today is going to share with you is going to be enjoyed by you, the listener, as well. You're going to get so much from this episode. You're going to be able to improve your mindset. It's going to be a great story that my guest shares today as well. And also, hopefully, it will inspire you to get moving more and possibly get into climbing and mountaineering. So this is a topic and an area very close to my heart, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well. So let's move on to my guest today. My guest is Noel Hanna. And Noel is a renowned adventurer of the highest order. He's from Northern Ireland and he has scaled pretty much every big mountain on this planet. He's competed in adventure races, Spartan races, and he is also the first Irish person to successfully summit and descend K2. And for you guys that know anything about mountains and about climbing and about the Himalayas, K2 is arguably one of the hardest, the most difficult, the most technical mountains to climb in the world or on Earth. four, it's roughly for every four that summit K2, one person dies. So it is a really extreme and difficult mountain to climb. So Noel has accomplished that. He's also climbed all of the seven summits. So every highest mountain range or highest peak on each continent around the world. So all seven continents, he's climbed the highest mountain range. But Noel being Noel, and you're going to learn a little, well, not a little, a lot more about him during this podcast episode. Noel decided to take it one step further. So he's climbed the seven summits and then got down to sea level, back down from the summit to sea level by his own means. That means no public transport, no aeroplanes, no cars, nothing, only by his own power. So that's walking or running, skiing or cycling. He's got down to sea level in the fastest amount of time possible. So he's set world records for this, for climbing a mountain and getting back down to sea level in the fastest time possible. Yes, crazy, right? But you're going to learn a lot more about that during this podcast episode. I could go on and on. He's got so many achievements and so many things that he's accomplished in his career. And yeah, this is going to be a super inspiring episode, if nothing else. That's enough about that. I want Noel to tell you a bit more about him. I want to get stuck into his stories and introduce the man himself. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get stuck into episode number 37 of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Noel Hannah, Master Adventurer. Hi Noel, how are you today?
Hi, Ali. All good. It's good here in Northern Ireland. The sun's shining, so can't be that bad.
Better than us then. It's raining here in Nottingham.
Oh, disasters. Beautiful day here in County Down.
Nice, very nice. Well, thank you for taking your time out to speak to me. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. If I can help people out there, maybe it would do some good.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to picking your brain, asking you some questions, because I don't know whether it's a fascination or I'm a bit weird with the whole climbing thing, but I've never really climbed myself other than bouldering, but I'm obsessed by it. I'm always watching documentaries and reading up on various feats that people have done. So I know you've done a lot in your life and in your career, so this is going to be as much an inspiration for me, but also hopefully we can help as many listeners as possible and inspire some people.
Perfect, yes, no problem at all.
Awesome. Before we get started with the questions, mate, can you just give myself and a bit of sorry, myself and the listeners a bit of a background about you?
Yes, I was, unfortunately, I'm 52 years of age now. I was born in 1967 into a farming family. Done the farming, played football, played soccer, played Gaelic, played rugby at school. And then I joined the police force in Northern Ireland. I served 15 years, but really in the last 4 or 5 years, I got into doing more long distance running and adventure racing. And in turn, some of these got into climbing and climbing different peaks. And that's basically I got into more longer endurance and fitness and climbing really whenever I turned 30.
Nice.
So I was a late starter. So I was.
And since then, you've gone on to do many things, which I'm sure we'll touch on further on in this podcast. But
Yes.
what would you say then is your main motivator? I mean, you've done some amazing things in your climbing career. But what drives you? What motivates you to really go out there and do these challenges and achieve these feats that you've done?
I think it's really people just underestimates really what the body can do. And a lot of it is in the mind as well. No way I do all these things for my own personal goals, not for anybody else. It's just if I see a challenge, I like to change it, maybe to add a different tweak to it or do something different within a challenge that's been done before, just to add an extra bit onto it or to challenge the body that wee bit more.
Why is that then? Why do you want to tweak it? Because for most people, they'd say, okay, like climbing Everest or climbing the seven summits is a big enough challenge on its own. But then you tweak it and decide to get back down to sea level as quick as you can. What's the reason behind that? Is it just for your own satisfaction, or is there other factors behind it?
It's just really my own satisfaction. No way, loads of people has climbed Everest. Everest is not a hard climb, which a lot of people think it is, but it's just adding that other extra bit of endurance onto it that the mind has to really concentrate then on not just the climb, but the logistics. The logistics is nearly harder than actually doing the thing itself.
Yeah. So just once you got the mind right, then everything else follows.
Once you get the mind right and looking after your body and sort of telling your body that, yes, I can do that. But once you start to have any doubts, there's no point in carrying on. I'll talk about a couple of friends later on where I sort of set them straight whenever they had a few doubts in their running or Ironman careers.
Yeah. Talk to me then. I mean, obviously, you've been climbing for a while now, and you've done other stuff as well, adventures and long distance runs. But talk to me about some of the obstacles then, because surely there's going to have been huge obstacles in your life that you've had to overcome. And tell me maybe a few of the biggest ones that you've had to get around or overcome to get to where you are now.
The probably biggest obstacle that I've had to overcome was in 2005, me and then my partner, we weren't married then, Lynn, who I'm married to now, we went to Everest in 2005 to climb the mountain together, and possibly we had everything set in place to get married on the summit. But unfortunately, at just above 7,000 meters, I took retinal hemorrhage in one eye, and then the next day it came in the other eye. So that basically was my climb over. I'd done a lot of phone calls back to the Royal Hospital here in Belfast and hospitals in New York and whatnot, and they basically said that if my eyes bled again, there's a chance of permanent blindness. And to me, there's no peak or no achievement out there worth getting just for the sake of getting it to have blindness or have any part of your body missing. So we had to come off the mountain, abort our climb, and basically whenever I come back here to Northern Ireland, I wasn't allowed to drive for 2 months because the eyesight. And hopefully after 2 months they said it would clear up, and sure enough, 2 months time came that my eyes were near enough back to normal again.
Wow, that's a big thing. One thing that I want to touch on with what you just said is, well, there's a couple of things, but the first thing is, how do you process that in your mind? So you're all the way up this mountain. Yes, something really bad's happened, or you've had a hemorrhage of your retina, or some people have injuries when they're up a mountain. How does the mind work to say, right, do I carry on, or do I say, right, enough's enough, let's pull the plug? Because a lot of people, they don't know when to stop, do they? But what's your mindset and your thought process around stopping and coming down, or not giving up's the wrong word, but you know what I mean, coming away from what you've set out to do?
Well, for me, it's quite easy, because if there's any chance of a permanent illness or injury or anything like that there, the mountain's always going to be there to come back and try it again. So it's not as if I'm not going to risk my life. I've too much living that I still want to do. And yeah, other things that I want to do, that there's no one thing that I'm willing to give a toe or give frostbite fingers or anything like that there. Obviously, if something happens, like an avalanche, and you're caught out in it, totally different. But if it's in your control, I'm going to come back down and give it another go again.
Nice. Not worth taking the risk.
No, it's certainly not. Life's too precious to lose a finger or lose a foot over climbing a mountain.
Yeah. And how was your wife when you, when that happened? Was she, your wife to be, was she okay? And did everything, well, everything obviously worked out, but did that go okay?
Yes, she was perfect, and she wouldn't go on without me. we always said before we went to the mountain that if anything happened, one would carry on. And I think she was saying that, thinking that if anything's going to happen, it's going to be to her, and then I would carry on. But obviously, she took the decision to come off the mountain with me, and probably a good decision looking back on what actually happened then later on in the expedition.
Right. You and your wife have done some summits together though, haven't you?
Yes, we've done Everest both from the south side and the north side together. And obviously other peaks as well, Mount Elbrus, Kilimanjaro, Aconcagua, and other peaks around the world.
And how does that work with you doing it together? Because I know what it's like to be in it with somebody. With my wife, we obviously run and operate our own business, our gym together. And what's that relationship like when you're climbing together? And how does the support system work? And how does your wife help you and inspire you as well?
Well, we work obviously as a team. It's the same as I met my wife through needing somebody for the Eagle Challenge, which is a 4-person team event. And before we go on the likes of a 4-team adventure race Eagle Challenge, we always said between the 4 people, what is said and what is done on the race is completely forgotten about whenever you come back home, because people are under stress, people are hallucinating, sometimes they don't even remember saying things that they said. So we've always said, even in the climbing, that whatever happens is forgotten about once you come off the mountain again or off the race, that everything's back to normal.
God, yeah. So you don't touch on it, you don't have any feedback, you just rock on.
No, well, we obviously talk about it, and even doing some of the races, like some of the people will turn around to Lynn and say, how do you let him speak to you like that? Like some of the races that I know that Lynn, like pull-ups or pulling up in bars and things that I know that Lynn's quite capable of doing and has done it before, and she's maybe struggling at this time of doing it, and me giving her sort of a mouthful to say get on, and people then later send her, why does, you know, you allow him to speak to it? But she says that's really a driver on for her.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's how we work.
Got you. And how important do you think it's been for you personally, having your wife in your life and having that kind of support system and that driver behind you?
Oh, it's 100%. You need it, because there's no point in going to the mountain or going to do a race or going to do something if the person back home is sitting on their own and not 100% behind you. No way. To me, it's either make or break, where you sometimes, if you do a climb or finish a race.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on a little bit, mate. What about, this is something that also always intrigues me about climbers in particular, is fears. So for me, when I'm watching documentaries or programs, or I'm seeing these people climbing and doing amazing summits, I always think they've got to like be scared, or they've got to have some fear. So what are your fears, mate, in relation maybe to what you do, but also in life, and if you're happy to share them, and how do you overcome them?
I think if it's such a big fear, you shouldn't really be doing it. Yes, a lot of it, to me, I think a lot of things in life is common sense. And unfortunately, nowadays, a lot of people, whenever you see them doing some silly things, you think to yourself, has people not got common sense now? And obviously, with the mountains and the racing for me, it's years of experience. And that's what I'm sort of working on at the minute. No way, just you go to see a mountain, you know, yes, am I going to do it, or no, I'm not going to do it. And you just see the whole, no way, bigger picture rather than just the route that you're going up.
Yeah. Do you ever fear then, or worry about failing or missing out on completing one of your challenges?
Not really. I've been on peaks before where the likes of I've turned around at 8,300 meters and the summit's 150 meters away. I've turned around for a good reason. Again, maybe my toes are cold or my fingers are cold, but the mountain's always going to be there for me to go back and do it again. Not reaching the summit is not a failure to me. It's no way been smart. I was on a peak in Kangri Shar in November last year. It's a peak that's never been climbed before. And we turned around 100 meters from the summit because it was too dangerous. And one of the Sherpas had got injured by falling rock. So to me, that's not a failure. It's a smart move because we could have went on and somebody could have got killed. And there's nothing worse than that there. No way. That's the way I look at it. And I can go back to the same peak and attempt it again, maybe with better conditions.
Yeah, I think that's a really amazing attitude to have. And something that I hope the listeners pick up on is that having that logic, that common sense, and that ability to say, no, now's not the right time. What do I take from it? What lesson do I learn? And how can I come back next time and probably change it or do it better? I think that's great. And that leads me nicely into the next question I want to ask you, Noel, which is centered around the mental strength. I know we've already kind of touched on it a little bit, but how important is it for you to have that mental toughness? And do you have any tips that you could give to the listeners to improve their mental strength and that mental ability?
Yes, the body can really do a lot more than what people think. I remember whenever I went to do my first 100-mile race in the Himalayas, was a stage race, and me and my friend from here really, really trained like 6 days a week and put in the effort. And like a week before we were going, he says to me, I don't know if I'll finish it. And I basically said to him, if you've any doubts now, there's no point in going to do the race because your mind's going to pull you down. And it's not about getting first in the race or getting second in the race. It's finishing what you've set out to do. No way. We set out to go finish the race. Should we walk it? Should we go on our hands and knees? Should we be first? Should we be last? And that's what it's about. No way. It's just go do it and enjoy it.
Yeah, so are you saying that having that end in sight or that end goal of what you want to accomplish is one of the biggest things for the mindset?
Yes, definitely. It's different if you're doing a race or doing something and you get injured. It's out of your control. You have to pull out, same as the mountains. If the conditions is too dangerous, you have to pull out. But don't pull out just because, there's a burger fan here. I don't want to run on any further. And I've seen that happen in 100-mile races. A friend was running with us and he came to an area at 65-mile and he smelt the burgers and the onions and people were sitting drinking beer and he just finished there. And I've no doubt that he had the ability to go on and finish the 100-mile.
Wow. Yeah, burgers can be tempting.
Yeah, and the same person, I've known him for 20 years, was going to do his first Ironman, and he phoned me like 3 nights before, and he sort of was saying to me, no way, I don't know if I've trained enough and whatnot. And I just said to him, look, Colin, if you don't think you're going to finish, just there's not much point in spending the money and going. And he just says to me, whenever he heard that and he come off the phone, he just says, damn you, I'm going to go and finish this and show you that I can do it. So it was a good effect for him.
Yeah. Sticking on the mindset then, do you use any tactics when you're doing an expedition or a challenge? Do you use anything like self-talk or anything like that? Or are you just kind of laser focused? You've decided that you're going to do it and you get on with it? Or do you use anything like that, like affirmations or self-talk or bigging yourself up?
I don't use anything. Usually whenever I'm in expeditions or a race or anything, during the race, I'm thinking of my next project. A lot of the times I'm not thinking about what I'm doing at the time. No way. I'm thinking about maybe if I've another climb planned or I could do this or I could do that. I'm thinking ahead of whenever I'm finished this project, my next project.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So would you say then that when you're doing these climbs and you're thinking about the next challenge you're going to do, would you say that is that where your experience comes in, because you know what to do, you've done it, it's almost like second nature to you, and now you can almost vision what your next step's going to be?
Yes, experience is a great thing, but everybody has to start off from scratch, no matter what you're doing. And it's the same thing as a lot of people read a lot of things, and sometimes a lot of things that they read is not the truth. No, it's the same thing as if you're training somebody for a marathon, the first thing that, or 99% of the time, people will say to you about, what about I hit the wall at 20 miles? But to me, that's somebody else's wall that they've read about. Does that mean if they're struggling at 10 mile, in their mind, they're thinking, I shouldn't be struggling here, I can't do this?
Yeah, it's the...
I always say to people, no way, don't believe everything that you read. No way, do your own thing. If I'm doing 100 mile, my first 5 miles is the hardest. So does that mean I should be pulling out and not doing any more than 5 mile?
Makes sense. It's that preconditioning, isn't it? People they read stuff, they hear stuff, and then they believe it to be true for them. But everyone's different. Everyone's got their own abilities. Everyone's got their own wall, their own end limit. So that makes complete sense.
Yeah, that's the way I would always say to people, no way, just start off slow. If you're struggling, take it slower. If you're feeling good, go that wee bit faster and just work with the way your body is.
Nice. Leads me on nicely to the training then. So obviously you must have to do a fair amount of training and prep for these challenges, these expeditions, or just to do what you do. Tell me a little bit, Noel, about what your training and your prep looks like, maybe day to day, and then also like leading up to going on an expedition.
I like to train all year round.
Yeah.
And it's probably just for, I think if you train and you feel good, there's a lot of self-confidence then within yourself. I would train probably 5 days a week, and maybe sometimes that would be twice a day. I like going for short runs. I like going to the gym and doing the likes of the cross trainer or the stepper. And I like to do at least 40 minutes to an hour weights 4 or 5 days a week. So it's just an all round. No way. There's not one thing that I'm brilliant at. I'm not brilliant at running. I'm not brilliant at stepping. I'm not brilliant at doing weights. But if you're 70% half decent at everything rather than been good at one thing, I think it's the best for the body.
Yeah, for sure. And what carryover does the training that you have, that you do have when you're on a mountain or you're doing a race, do you think it's vitally important and you see a load of carryover, or is it just that you train just because you like the feeling and the well-being aspect of it?
No, well, I think in the climbing and even long distance running and whatnot, upper body strength, obviously for the climbing, is very, very beneficial. I was doing rope work with two friends on Sunday that are going to Leverest this year with me. And they know that they're not strong upper body. And some of the rope work that we were doing, they were struggling, but they know that they have to get their upper body strength up. And it's not doing big weights, it's just doing reps. And no way, it's not as if they're going to be going to the gym and wanting to be a bodybuilder. It's just to, no way, get your body into better shape and strength for the rope work that you're going to be doing.
Makes sense. What about your nutrition then, Noel? Is that something that you focus heavily on as well?
I don't really focus heavily on it, but I don't go out and eat fish suppers and fatty foods. I'm not strict or anything like that, but I eat healthily. But that's not to say that I'm out for a night and coming home with a few glasses of wine, I wouldn't eat a fish supper at 2 o'clock in the morning or a Chinese at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not one of these that is really, really strict with my diet, but I don't eat much fatty foods.
Yeah, balance.
Yes, common sense again. No way, if you eat fish and chips or fatty foods 3 or 4 times or 5 or 6 times a week, it's not good for the body to process.
Yeah. All right, let's move on a little bit then, mate. Let's talk about all of the things that you've done in your life. So I'm just going to reel off a few ones, so a few for the listeners. So you've obviously, is it 8 times Everest?
Yes, 8 times.
8 times Everest. You've done 7 summits. You've climbed all of the 7 summits and then got back down to sea level as quick as possible. You've done the Marathon du Sahara. You've done adventure races. Well, you name it. You've done it. Out of everything that you've done, Noel, what one or two things stand out, or what one or two experiences, memories stick out for you the most?
Probably the most memory that sticks out, and even my friend that I've traveled to the 7 continents with would say the same. We climbed Carson's Permit in Papua New Guinea. It's not a difficult climb, but then I had to go to sea level. So I got in touch with a missionary in West Papua New Guinea, and he organized 3 local people that he could sort of way come and meet us close to the mountain. And then they were to take us through villages and then pass on to the next people to take us to the next village. But a lot of these villages had never seen a Westerner before. So we were going through areas that we didn't even know where we were ourselves. No way, we had a map, the rough area where we were going to and what village we needed to get to. And just going through areas like that, and the people still just wearing a gourd on them and like basically nothing, and living in these mud huts with pigs and things just running in and out of the huts, was probably my most rememberable adventure that I've ever had.
What kind of feelings did came out of that? Sorry, when you was going through these villages and you've done this, obviously this climb, you're trying to get to it, to your destination. What were the emotions? What were the things that were standing out for you as you were seeing these people and seeing these villages?
To be honest, there was a lot of it that halfway through went to fear, because we were shot at. Like, you were coming into these villages and people with guns, bow and arrows, knives, and like nobody knew back home where you were, because a lot of the time the satellite phone wouldn't work in and under the tree line. So you were there basically, and if anything did happen, really there was no way out. So you're at really the mercy of the local people.
Wow.
So, but then it was just the joy of seeing these people and then seeing the way they live and thinking to yourself, people really aren't thankful enough whenever you see the way people live back here in the UK and in Ireland compared to what the way these people were living in this island. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah, that I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's being grateful, isn't it, for what we've got, and also being humble. Because I mean, I've been to places in Africa, and there's a few that stick out where these people, they've got nothing, and they're living in like mud huts, tin huts, and some of them are the happiest people you'll ever meet in your life. So I think sometimes we should always be grateful and take a step back and look at what we've got and be thankful for sure.
Oh, definitely. And I think maybe that's the problem with the way things are nowadays. People here just take it for granted. No way, there's no such thing as whenever you go to these places that the kids are running about with phones. They've maybe got an old bicycle wheel, a rim, and they've got a bit of stick, and they're playing up and down the street or up and down the fields or whatnot with this one rim, and they're as happy as anything.
Yeah, for sure. Out of all the mountains then that you've summited, which is your favorite to climb? Do you have a favorite?
Probably the one that stands out in me the most. No way, I summited and got down off K2 successfully last July, and people say to me, "Whoa, that's probably the one that stands out the most." But the one that stands out the most for me was Burk Khan, which I summited in 2017, and it was named after a good friend of mine, Bill Burk from the US. And Bill had been there 3 times before and unfortunately didn't make summit. And then in 17, he asked, would I go along with him and another friend? And Bill always said that if he didn't summit it first, he would like one of his friends to summit it first. So we went on the expedition in October 17, and Bill wasn't feeling well, but myself and three Sherpas made summit. So basically we were standing in this summit where less people had been. There was only the three of us or four of us. There was more people on the moon than there had been there.
Wow.
And to get back down and see Bill's face, that one of his team that was with him were the first people to summit, because the month after that, there was another climber or two or three climbers coming to attempt it. But Bill was really wanting somebody from his team to summit then, that it's unfinished business and it's done for him, that he wouldn't want to have to go back again. And Bill is 75 now, 76.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Was that a bittersweet moment, or was it just general joy all around? Because obviously he didn't get there, or do you know what I mean? Was it?
Well, to me it was sweet because the route that we were doing, nobody had been there before. So you were finding your own routes, finding your own way. It's the same as the peak that I was on last year, that we had to turn around 100, 150 metres from the summit. No way, it's a trial and error. You go up 200 metres, 300 metres and find that you can't go any further. So you have to come back down. You've wasted all that 4 or 5 hours putting in ropes, putting in anchors, and have to come back down then and start and find a new route.
Makes sense. Do you still get the buzz then? No, obviously you've done all of these summits and you've achieved so much. Do you still get to the summit, or you're close to the summit, and do you still get those same feelings that you've always got, the same buzz? Or
I have, but mostly now for me, it's the buzz. The buzz for me is seeing the joy and the people that you take with you. I'm actually heading to Mexico here at the weekend, and I have an 81-year-old who didn't do anything until he turned 70. And the last 10 or 11 years, he's done something with me every year. And to me, just seeing the joy in his face whenever he gets to the summit. And even in September last year, I had an American guy and his 11-year-old son to the summit. And it's just seeing the joy in the kiddie's face, or an elderly person's face, or anybody's face. I had a person that I was taking on Everest, I think it was 2011 or 12, and he had tried Everest twice before, and just about 20 metres from the summit, Jimmy got down onto his knees and started to cry because he knew that he was going to make summit this time, and it had been a lifelong dream for him to get to the summit. And for me, seeing that was better than me making summit.
That's amazing. And that's also, for me, in my opinion, like hugely powerful as well, because you've done it, you've been there, you've got that experience, that knowledge, but then you're passing that on to other people and changing their lives. I just think that's amazing.
Yeah, for me, that's nowadays on a peak that I've done before, it's just seeing the joy and like these, even Kilimanjaro, people dream all their lives and save all their lives sometime to do it, and for them to achieve it at a young age, a middle age, any age, it's just an achievement for them. And for me, it's the joy in getting them up and down safely.
Yeah, nice. What tips then could you give, mate, to the listeners or to myself on how they could possibly not just follow in your footsteps, because that would be amazing if people could achieve half of the stuff that you've done, but if they just wanted to get into climbing and getting into adventuring, what are some of the 2 to 3 best tips you could give the listeners and myself to do that?
Yes, you need to have a certain amount of fitness, but you don't need to be a super person to do any of these challenges. And again, being prepared before you go to the mountain, have the proper gear. If something, if a coat is £80 and it's Gore-Tex, and you see another one that's not Gore-Tex and it's maybe a wee bit heavier at £60, just go that extra bit, because sometimes it's going to save your life. No way, the better quality gear you have, it's going to keep you warmer, it's going to keep you drier, and it's going to last longer. And don't always just go for the cheapest people that are taking you somewhere, because sometimes that's where accidents happen and they've no experience, they don't have no support on the mountain or support with them if anything did happen. So always look out first of all before you go and make sure that your own abilities. I always say to people going to Everest, have the skill set that you need to climb the mountain without a Sherpa. Yes, the Sherpa is going to be there to carry gear and everything for you, but have your skills that you can get up and down the mountain on your own. Because if you go to summit and a Sherpa falls and breaks his leg, are you going to sit with a Sherpa on the summit and die also? No way. You have to be comfortable and confident within yourself to get back down on your own.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have any other tips? Because one thing I want to point out is a lot of people may be put off by getting into mountaineering or adventuring or trekking because of cost elements. Can you talk about that a little bit and get around that one?
Well, cost elements, it's not, yes, it's costly to start with, but the likes of boots, a waterproof coat and trousers and a rucksack can last you for 10 years. So look at the bigger picture down the line. Yes, if you're only wanting to do one small peak, it can be expensive, but take it over a 5 or 10 year period, that if you buy good stuff at the beginning, it's going to last you. And you know within yourself that you've done everything in your power, that it's up then to the mercies of the weather and whatnot if you don't succeed. But you've done everything that you can under your control that's made it possible for you to try and get to the summits.
I think as well now, with climbing in particular and bouldering, it's a lot more accessible, isn't it? Here, I mean, in my city in Nottingham here, we've got 2 climbing centres alone. So, and they don't cost the earth to go and just to learn or to mess about on the bouldering wall. I mean, it's not as expensive to just start something like that as people think, is it?
Not really. And same as if you're thinking of Kilimanjaro and these other mountains, it's just a matter of a rucksack and getting out into the country parks, getting out into the hillside, and it's free getting out into the hillside walking. No way, it costs no money.
Yeah.
And always make sure that you've got water or things with you, that you're not going out in a pair of shorts. If you're only new to it, have a coat, have a waterproof coat that, and a warm fleece or something, that if you did twist an ankle, that you've gear to put on to wait until help comes for you.
What's next then for you, Noel? Where do you see things going in the next few years? Any more challenges on the horizons? Any more things that you want to accomplish? What's in the pipeline?
Me and my wife are hopefully heading back to Everest next year to attempt it without oxygen. Ideally, I would love to do Everest without oxygen. I don't know if I'm too old or getting too old to do it, but it's a challenge that I've always wanted to do in, over the last 5 or 6 years. But if you're taking people up, it's irresponsible to try it without oxygen. So next year, me and the wife's going to go together and try it without oxygen. And of a few other things, there's the 7 summits record. My Polish friend had it in 126 or 127 days. And then last year, an Australian broke it and it's 125 days. But ideally, I would love to crash that, at least take a lot of days off it. I've a few things in the pipeline, so that's why I don't want to give anything away at present.
Okay, watch this space.
Yeah.
I suppose with that challenge of breaking the 7 summits one, that's a lot of that is down to what you mentioned right at the beginning of this podcast, is the logistics, isn't it?
Logistics is the big player, and obviously money too is a big player, because you're changing flights constantly, and to change flights or to book flights where you can have a change is usually twice the price of flights that you can't have a change. So a lot of it's down to costs as well.
Back to that cost element.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. Sounds like there's some exciting things lined up for you, mate. Well, I appreciate everything you've shared with us today. It's been brilliant, and for me, inspiring as well to hear some of the stuff that you've done and that you've achieved. It's great. Where can the listeners go now to find out more about you and keep tabs on what you're doing?
If they just go to my website, just noelhanna.com, I might be lazy that I don't update my website every time, but I try to get it done up as quick as possible. But it's just really, I'm the same as any other of your listeners. I'm not any better, any good, or any fitter than anybody else. No way. You don't need to be a super person to climb Everest or do these challenges. It's just get the time to do it. Think mentally, no way, that yes, I can do this and get out there and do it. But a lot of people come home and they climb a big mountain and they sort of way put it out as if it was harder than it actually was. No way. People will come home and if the wind was 20 mile an hour and the snow was 1 foot deep, they'll come home and say the wind was 50 mile an hour and the snow was 2 foot deep, just to make it out that they're better than what normal people are. But trust me, been there, done that, it's not difficult, and if you put your mind to it, the body can do it.
Yeah, for sure. There you have it, guys. That's coming from Noel, and with all his expertise, you can do it as well. Anyone can do it, and I think that's a great thing, and you've highlighted that more than once on this podcast, and that if you put your mind to it, if you really focus, the body can get you there. I mean, it's getting that mind right and thinking of the end goal of what you want to achieve, and then just getting out there and doing it, isn't it? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. No, what? Go on, sorry, mate.
If anybody wants to ask any questions or anything, shoot me an email through my website, and I'm quite happy to answer back.
Yeah, perfect. And I'll make sure I mention that in the description section of the podcast when I put it out, and I'll put a link to your website as well, so people can send you a message. And I think I'll be picking your brain as well, because my wife and I definitely want to get into the climbing. So I'll be in touch to speak to you about that.
Perfect, Al. Thanks very much for having me on with yourself today.
No worries. My pleasure. And I mean, for me, it's about sharing as much knowledge and expertise as we can with the listeners to help them to be better and live a great life. So I appreciate your time. Before we wrap things up, mate, I always finish my podcast in the same way, and that's with a favorite quote, and it can be one of your own or something that you live by. If you've got one, can you just finish this episode with a favorite quote of yours?
Yes, life's not a rehearsal. You're only here once, no way. So live life to the full while you're here.
Perfect. Don't get any better than that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Noel. I appreciate your time.
No, pal, Mal. Thanks very much.
See you soon. Cheers.
Cheers, bud. Cheers.
Wow. There you have it, guys. Another episode complete. Another amazing guest. Super, super inspirational guy, Noel Hanna. And what an amazing story he's got. What an amazing career he's had. And I hope you guys found that as inspiring as I did. That's it for this week. Really love that. I'm going to bring you another great episode next week. I'm going to keep bringing you great guests and bring you information that's going to help you to live that longer, healthier, happier, and more joyful life. Before I depart, don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, leave a review, tag me on your Instagram stories and Instagram posts. And if you need any further help, if you are struggling with your health and wellness, or you want to take your health and wellness to the next level, then do not hesitate to get in touch. Send me an email. All the contact details are in the description of this podcast, and I will come back to you. I can help you in any way I can. That's it. Have a great week. Until I speak to you next week, stay strong, stay blessed. Peace and love.